following takes place between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to FPC Radio Live. We are back after a raucous three-day weekend. That's right. We had to take an extra day off after the debut of the XFL, because as we all know, the X stands for, well, actually, we don't really know. I was going to say extreme, but that's not right, and I would feel wrong telling giving you guys misinformation. But no, we had Monday off, and we are excited to be back here. So without further ado, it's time to bring on. He is, that's right. You know what? I'm gonna mix it up a little bit. You know, I'm feeling a little bit different here. So, without further ado, let's bring on my co-host. He is, of course, the
everybody's got price.
Hey, don't. You know, tempt me. I could have gone the whole 3 minutes and 30 seconds on that song, and I would have been just as fine doing that. So, without further ado, Mr. Mike DeBate. Mike, how are we doing today?
La, la, la.
Yeah, there you go.
Excellent. Oh, what an entrance. The Million Dollar Rap Boy, I tell you. One of the first wrestling songs that I can remember just listening to and going, that is awesome. That is great. That is one of the best songs you could possibly, like, you know, be entered into the ring to. great way to begin the new week here on FBC Radio Live. Thank you, everyone, for your patience yesterday. As Ian said, raucous weekend. A personal moment for me yesterday, but definitely back at it and happy to be back at it because we have a lot to talk about, including the XFL.
That's right. And you know what? We're going to start right there because, again, you said it. We have a lot to talk about. I don't even know if we're going to get to everything I want to talk about today, but that's the good thing about having a show Monday through Friday is, well, we'll just pick up where we left off tomorrow morning. So I do want to start with the XFL because we did obviously just get through the first weekend for the second time in XFL history, and there was no dislocated shoulders on the kickoff. So that's a good start. I do want to touch on the XFL. Obviously, we spent a lot of time talking about Mookie Betts last week. The saga is finished. We will talk about that. And some other interesting tidbits out of Major League Baseball. You know, since the last time we've been on the air, there's been a Wall Street Journal article written about in a lot of detail about the Astros sign stealing situation. There's obviously some more details that kind of look a little bit more favorably to a former Red Sox manager. We're going to talk about that, and hopefully we're going to try to wrap this all up in this episode, but I have a feeling that we're not. So let's jump into it. XFL. Right off the bat, I was impressed. I enjoyed watching the football. As a lifelong Tampa Bay Vipers fan, though, I was very disappointed. And, you know, it was a lot of pretty good football. I think there was some rust early on, obviously. I mean, some of these guys, haven't thrown, you know, talking about some of these quarterbacks, haven't thrown passes since 2014 or haven't won a game in 5 years. So there's going to be some noticeable rust with some of these players. And, of course, you know, the whole idea that you're all playing together for the first time ever in an actual competition, you know, not just practice, not just training camp or any of that other nonsense. This is actual real game action. And look, I enjoyed the product. I thought the XFL, you know, again, there's something we can compare it to, and that's the first version. And again, we're both old enough to have very vivid memories of that first version of the XFL. You know, we're not just living it through the eyes of the ESPN 30 for 30. Like, I sat on my couch and watched kickoff XFL weekend 2001, and I remember it very vividly. This had a whole different feel to it. It had a much more professional football feel to it. And again, that a lot of that has to do with the product on the field. I mean, you can't fake football from a production value. You can put all this pizzazz and flashiness into the production, but at the end of the day, if you're not getting a good product on the field, it's all going to fall flat. I thought the XFL gave us both this weekend, and a lot of very intriguing differences between how their rules are versus the NFL, which I think are already kind of sticking out to a lot of people. So, Mike, I got to ask you, what was your impression, and how much did you catch of the XFL this weekend?
I caught a good amount of it, and also as a lifelong DC Defenders fan, I have to be feeling pretty good about myself right now. You know, come on, how 12 Gauge himself taking snaps under center for the DC Defenders, the man that I covered tirelessly when I had the beat for the Los Angeles Chargers, Cardale Jones. No, all kidding aside, I mean, there are a couple of former Patriots on that roster as well. I want to make that Nick Brossette, Scooby Wright, also on the roster for the DC Defenders. But no, in all actuality, and all kidding aside, I was pleasantly surprised by a lot of what I saw. I think at this point in time, you can make the argument that Vince McMahon got it right. I think he really realized that the focus needs to be on football. Put the theatrics aside. Take the sideshow out of what's going to happen, and you will get serious, feedback, and you will get serious fans that are willing to come out and to not only watch the product on television, but also come out and support the product in person. And attendance was very good. Television ratings were very good. So you have to see if it's going to sustain that. Now, a lot of that is curiosity. First weekend without football, yada, yada, yada. You got all that to contend with, but ultimately I think this is going to be a good fit for professional football, and at the very least it extends the game for a few months, and I think anybody that's a football fan is all for that. What stood out to me, the kickoffs. I thought the kickoff was brilliant. I really did. I like that they lined the teams up only 5 yards apart from one another, had more of a line of scrimmage type feel. I think the fact that they're incentivizing, if that's a word, I think that's a word. Fact that they're making,
I'll contact Webster's.
Absolutely. We'll contact Webster. We'll get back to you folks. But the fact that they're making an incentive out of returning as opposed to either having a touchback or kneel down or things of that nature, I think this is good for the game. I really do. I think in terms of watch, I think it's definitely a great amount. I actually was pretty impressed by their scoring replay and how they work that. I think I think the NFL could actually take a little bit of a page out of their book.
They could take a lot of pages, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly, and be able to do that. I think they have a real level of transparency that's not available in the NFL. And really, I think a lot of that has been a frustration for NFL fans for a while. That's one of the big pieces of feedback that I got from a lot of fans that were watching the XFL over the weekend. And, you know, ultimately, those are the types of things that stood out to me. You make the argument about the conversion, and I think a lot of people are looking at this because that's basically, with the exception of the kickoff, that's basically one of the glaring changes that the XFL has made from the NFL. And, you know, they have the plays from the 2, the 5, and the 10-yard line. That's a great idea, I think, for excitement. Set the league apart from the NFL, but at the same time, I think the level of play needs to be amped up, or this is going to get old really quick. There were only 7 of 19 conversions with 4 successful one-pointers and 3 2-pointers. So, and no one attempted a 3-pointer, which I was really surprised. I figured that at least one would do that over the weekend. They didn't. But at this point, I love it in concept, but the execution is going to have to be better in order for that to really stick out as something that makes the XFL unique. But other than that, that's my long-winded way of telling you what I liked, what I didn't, and I think it's I think it was a successful weekend overall for the XFL.
Yeah, I'd say that they clearly looked at what the NFL had to offer, listened to what the NFL fans have said, and what the NFL has tried to do in terms of safety. Because I think, look, traditionally, I would obviously love the, you know, to keep the kickoff the way it used to be before the NFL moved it back. So now it's, 75% touchbacks. But I understand that they're trying to make the game safer. And if that's the case, if it's, if that's the focus, then I really love the way the XFL did this because they've accomplished both. They've managed to eliminate the high impact, high velocity hits that often come with special teams that have led to a lot of you know, obviously head injuries and stuff like that. And they've also made it to so it's not pointless, and there's an actual intrigue to kickoffs, and I love that about this league. Do again, like I said, if I had my preference, I'd much rather them just traditionally. But again, that's not a knock on the XFL. That's just the XFL being innovative and really going outside the box to try to figure out this problem. Because I feel like the NFL was just like, oh, we'll just move the kickoff up. You know, they're just like, okay, whatever. End of the meeting. Let's figure out how to do this. And you know, again, I think this that the XFL really it did a good thing here. Now, I'm still intrigued. Like you said, I'm intrigued about the extra point. And for those of you watching on Sportscaster right now, the motion behind me is I have cats going crazy. Cats roll everything around me, folks. So if it comes crashing down, don't panic. The world's not ending. It's just cats behind me fighting. So, but yeah. So, anyways,
well, the only way you have to worry about it coming crashing down is when it comes crashing down. Does it hurt inside? But at that point, you got to take a stand. It don't help to hide.
I wish I had. Where is this? I have to have this. Do I have it?
Let me tell you something.
Yeah, I was going to say, if not, I can just... Oh, there we go.
There it is.
Hold on, we got to make sure. Let's see how... Let's go through this. And when it comes, there we go. Down,
oh, Hulk Hogan!
Oh, this is... we can do the whole show with this in the background if you want. Hold on. Had to get to the chorus at least once.
American.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, all right. We're really getting off the rails here, but
well, not really. It's XFL. It kind of actually,
you know what? No, you're right. You're you know what? You're right. I was wrong. Let's let's go again.
Now we made people sick of the San Diego Superchargers song. Now Real American is gonna come.
I'm glad and you brought up a great point about Vince. It looks like he's obviously learned from past mistakes, although again, like if each team like picked one like classic wrestling entrance song to come out to like each week, that would be like the only connection. Like that would be awesome. Like, imagine that. You just, you go through, okay, maybe this will be a little fun exercise. You're a lifelong DC Defenders fan. What do you think would be the DC Defenders theme song?
Well, you go with the mood of DC. I'd probably go with Doink the Clown music. I guess that, you know, no, you know what? I think a little No Chance. I think a little No Chance in Hell could be the mood of the DC Defenders. You know, No Chance in Hell you're going to score on us. That's why they call them the Defenders, folks. Top-notch defense.
That's right. Actually, you know what? See, there you go. The Doink the Clown thing could actually work pretty well for the Tampa Bay Vipers, now that I think about it, because that was kind of a very, very clownish...
I was really referring, not really to the team on the field, I was really referring more to the mood of DC and, you know, true. The folks occupying, you know, our epicenters of government, namely, you know, the White House and Capitol Hill. But, you know, that's a good... well, you know what, we'll digress. We're not going to make this political today.
No.
It's all about the XFL.
The XFL. That's right. Whatever we were talking about before, it's been lost. I have no I have no. Oh, one thing I do want to bring up, and then something I loved, it was the transparency. Oh my God, was the transparency amazing when it came to reviews, to discussions, to everything. Like I like hearing the plays. I do kind of wonder how much the players and the coaches actually like that aspect of it. You know what I mean? Where everything's mic'd up. I understand it's a great entertainment thing. I don't know if the players are actually, you know, all gung-ho about that, especially coaches. I mean, can you imagine Bill Belichick ever agreeing to something like that? Absolutely not.
Oh, but God, no.
From a fan standpoint, Absolutely. I mean, it's fun. It's fun to listen to. It's fun to watch. I mean, get, you know, you kind of get that insight.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's right, Macho Man.
That's right, Mr. And, Savage. Absolutely.
And again, you get to hear, and the way they have everything set up too is, you know, all the offensive players have head, you know, earpieces, so they hear the play. So there's no time wasted. You know, I'm not saying wasted, but time spent, you know, communicating from, you know, one from coach to quarterback to player, and this kind of goes in line with their 25-second play clock. But when it comes to the transparency, whether it's replay review, challenges, anything like that, I love it. I thought they did a fantastic job of that this weekend.
They really did. To me, I think from a fan standpoint, it's remarkable. It really is. You know, to have that type of insight and to have that type of eyes in the actual play calling, in the actual, you know, inner workings of the field, even just the in-game interviews. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. there's a lot of transparency in terms of what the fan experience is, with regard to the XFL. I think a lot of that is by design. I think that's how they're trying to separate themselves from the NFL and make it an alternative product, not one that competes, but just an alternative, something different and something to kind of, you know, make them unique in a lot of ways. You mentioned Bill Belichick. I was thinking of that this weekend. It was funny that you brought that up. I was like, "There, I can't even imagine the death stare the reporter is going to get who finally like has the temerity to ask Bill Belichick about the XFL and about that type of, because you know it's coming. You know,
absolutely.
Someone will. And I have my thoughts on some of my colleagues in the media up here about who that someone just might be. could be. It very well could be. Yep, it very well could be. But in any case, the person that does ask him about that is, yeah, they're going to get the stare of death like you can't imagine. But no, I cannot imagine Bill Belichick or really a lot of the NFL head coaches agreeing to something like that. I can't imagine opening their use a terminology that we know here well in New England, opening their world up to the fan experience, I think is not something that especially old school coaches are going to be willing to do. But it's a changing of the guard. It's a different type of feel. So we'll see how it ends up working out. I do think that might be an adjustment, though, for the XFL. I think right now it's going along well because the fans are liking it. But eventually, I think there's going to become a point where it becomes a liability for coaches, for players. Play calling, I think, is going to be much more problematic as a result of this, especially as we get 2, 3, 4 weeks in. So you might see some tweaks of this, and I think that's something that'll be revisited in their offseason. But based on what we saw in the initial weekend, I don't think this is headed for a first year fold. I think the XFL has at least got one more year left in it. I mean, we'll see what happens, but I believe they've got something here, and I think Vince McMahon and the brain trust with the XFL know that.
Well, and look, we talked about this last week prior to kickoff weekend, and one of the huge advantages that the XFL has is the financial backing and security that the AAF didn't have. I mean, again,
right.
when you're looking for outside investors in the middle of the season, you're in a lot of financial issues. And on top of that, not only has Vince, you know, committed the money, he's committed it for 3 years. So there's a budget for this league that's already in place. This isn't, we're trying to find investors. And then on top of that, they have a far better TV deal to get more eyes on it. Because we saw last year, the AAF got off to a great start, you know, a lot of success, but, you know, obviously the viewership never reached that number again. And it kind of plummeted after that, because not only were they not as accessible for everyone else, I mean, they had games on like CBS Sportsline and all these other, you know, more pay for network channels, as opposed to what the XFL has, which is Fox, ABC, ESPN. Like, I mean, that's legit. And you're going to get more eyes on the product in that sense. So, we're going to take a quick break here, just a minute or two. Go to, you know, we got to pay the bills on the podcast, all that fun stuff. But we're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We will be back. We're going to talk some Mookie Betts LA, some other Major League Baseball stuff, and anything that other, you know, happens to cross our mind. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back. That's right, folks. We are back. And yes, this is the official theme song of That's right, your Tampa Bay Vipers. And you welcome out the 3-point... Okay, no, fuck. I'm disappointed in the loss, everyone. I know all you Vipers fans out there. You know, it'll come. It'll come. Just got to turn it around. One game at a time. Next, you know, on to... Actually, I don't know who they're playing next week, so I can't say who... You know, on to DC. Is it DC? Oh, maybe we should check that out because, you know, we'll have a little rivalry game here. But, no, real quick before we move on to Mookie Betts and Major League Baseball, because I really do want to dive into this because this has been an absolute mess this whole week. One thing the XFL apparently is doing is taking their product very seriously because we, after 1 week, have already had a firing. Defensive coordinator Pepper Johnson. Yes, that's right, folks. New England fans are very familiar with that name. He spent a significant amount of time with the Patriots coaching staff up until I think it was 2013, 2014. And of course, he has been a longtime player, or at least he's been with Bill Belichick for quite some time. LA fired him after week one, which, I mean, that's just, to me, that's shocking. And I, you know, look, I feel bad for him because, you know, he's a good guy, obviously, a good coach. I don't understand the quick pull unless there's, you know, some other information that we don't know about. But yeah, a little bit strange, to say the least.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that as well, considering that just a few weeks ago, I spoke with Patricia Traina, who covers the New York Giants for Locked On Giants and for Sports Illustrated. And we had a little bit of a back and forth. And obviously, the conversation always leads to the synergy between the Giants and New England. And Pepper Johnson, obviously, there's a connection between both teams. And she had mentioned him as a possible defensive staff member coming on to help out Joe Judge when he was hired. And I actually agreed with her. I thought it was a pretty smart move. I said, well, you know, there's a lot of familiarity there. He knows the New England system. He knows the Giants system in the organization. So this could be a logical fit. I was really surprised to see the plug pulled after one game. You know, so there obviously is a level of excellence, or a level of, I guess, service, I guess is the best way to put it, a level of competition that these guys are expected to meet. And if they're not meeting it, they're going to have a quick pull. Now, you did mention if there's anything lurking behind the scenes that we don't know about, and I don't believe so.
No.
Pepper Johnson has always had a good, reputation. I've never known him to be, you know, anything other than an upstanding, individual. So I would probably venture to guess that's not the case, but you never actually know for sure. So, you know, I mean, if there is, I guess it'll come out within the, you know, coming days. But yeah, that was a little bit of an eye opener for me to see him out of a job so quickly. But, you know, again, that's the XFL. It's the way they're doing things. And, you know, they're setting the tone early and they're letting people know that they're not just a sideshow for NFL fans to make fun of until the combine and training camp and things like that open. They want this to be a viable alternative that people who are NFL fans can tune in and get their football fix deep into April, just in time to see their NFL teams come back into focus and start the season once again.
No, and yeah, and look, maybe this is a blessing in disguise because maybe it does open the door for him to go to the Giants, or look, maybe he comes back to the Patriots. There's a couple openings on that defensive staff that, you know, that
defensive line coach.
Yeah, yep. I was going to say, a position he filled in the past. So, absolutely. You know, as the linebackers and defensive line coach. So, you know, you never know. And again, it's unfortunate, you know, especially, you know, to have that as your, you know, your first, you know, your first firing in league history, quote unquote. You know, like I said, it's part of the game, and these coaches realize that. It's just it's hard to really separate the human from the product and what people expect from the job. And you know, it is what it is. And, you know, hopefully for him, he lands on his feet. So one of the things we spent a lot of time with talking about last week, and it's been kind of just an ongoing saga, it feels like, and it got really, really tiresome very quickly, was the Mookie Betts to L.A. trade, which was finally completed after the original deal was nixed and then repackaged. So ultimately what the Red Sox got in return was Alex Verdugo, shortstop Jeter Downs, and catcher Connor Wong for David Price, Mookie Betts, and the agreement to pay half of what David Price makes, which is half of $96 million. So what, $48 million, if I'm doing the math correct.
Yes.
Probably not. Yeah, yep. Yeah. No, that's right. I'm smart like that. Yeah. Look, I think we all there was a glimmer of hope. And I thought I was ready to come in here on Monday. You know, assuming this trade didn't finally get completed, and pound the desk that the Red Sox should just bite the bullet and call. And I did kind of say this last week that, you know, they should just bite the bullet and call Mookie's bluff and not trade him. And I still kind of think it was foolish for them to move on. And I want to put it in a nice, and this is the mindset that I'm looking at. You know, as a Red Sox fan, as someone who follows this team and is frustrated despite the success that they've had, our friend Chris Blackie put it perfectly. They're willing to go out and pay the likes of guys like Pablo Sandoval, Carl Crawford, and just throw heaps of money at these guys, but they can't re-sign guys like John Lester and Mookie Betts. And that's where I think ultimately the root of the frustration is for myself and for a lot of Red Sox fans, because they look at this like, you know, you're sitting here feeding us a bunch of, you know, mumbo jumbo about, oh, we want to get under the salary cap, we can't afford this, we can't afford that, blah, 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 blah. Well, the reason you can't do that is because you so foolishly threw money at other players and have continued to pay the price. And look, pun intended, they're going to be paying the price for several more years under the David Price contract. So in a way, they
nicely done.
Yeah, you like that. I didn't even write that down. It came naturally. But yeah, look, It's frustrating to watch this ownership team operate, and I don't think we're and I'm not putting this on Bloom. I think he was given a tough rap to have to deal with this, and I think ultimately he got the best possible package he could get. So this is not on him. This is, for me, this is about ownership and how they've handled things. And look no further than their statement yesterday. I mean, John Henry wasn't even there. Like, what? You just traded your franchise, you know, one of your best homegrown franchise players in team history, and you're not even going to show up for a press conference. You're going to release a statement, and that shows you everything you need to know about you know, just what this ownership values and what they really are motivated by. And it's dollars and cents, and it's not necessarily the fan base. It's not necessarily winning. I mean, they can get enough winning across the pond, you know, and enough money across the pond as well, and spend all, you know what I mean? So to me, it speaks volumes to what this ownership is and where they are currently. And it's just like, imagine, oh, I don't want to paint this picture, but the scenario that Tom Brady moves on to another team and they decide that, you know, we're going to have a press conference to announce it. Do you think Robert Kraft isn't going to show up? Is he going to just release a statement saying, oh yeah, well, we appreciate Tom's, you know, work, what he's put in, blah, 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 but it was best to move on? No, absolutely not. He'll be there right next to him. Bill Belichick will be right there. You know, maybe if the Red Sox had a manager, they would have been at that press conference yesterday, but who knows?
No, it's you're frustrated, and I can sense that. And believe me, I'm just as frustrated as you are. I mean, you asked the question before about, you know, and I think that's a great point made by Chris, as the fact that they can throw money at external free agents. But all of a sudden, when it comes to re-signing their own, the homegrown talent, all of a sudden the checkbook starts to shrink a little bit. But you're dealing with
they're a-hole puckers up tighter than a snare drum, I believe. son. Very, yeah. Five wardens have come through my, you know, have walked the halls here in my time. And anyways, Shawshank.
Absolutely.
I don't want to get distracted.
No, definitely.
Go for
it. No, you know what? We can go on a whole rabbit hole with Shawshank. And, yeah, you know, one of these days we will do that. I think that movie deserves its own show, folks. I mean, really, just the amount of you know, just amazing acting, you know, verbiage, scripting, just everything. So, you know what, we'll save that for another day. But that was very nice. There's another nice drop in. But in any case, it really pains me to say this, but you're looking at an ownership group in the Henry ownership group of the Boston Red Sox that are very reactionary. And I'm sorry to say that they are. They're reactionary. They look to see primarily what the team in the Bronx is doing, and they feel that they have to make that competition and make that to them, I think, is more important than the fact that the team wins on the field. I think they want that competition between the two entities in order to I don't want to say make themselves relevant, because the Sox are relevant on their own with the you know, the play they have on the field, but that's a very big moneymaker. The Red Sox-Yankees rivalry is a very big moneymaker. I mean, you know, you have, you know, Tom Werner coming out and saying, you know, and chanting Yankees suck. I mean, you know, these are things that, you know, ownership groups usually don't. I mean, you don't see Robert Kraft going out there and chanting, you know, J-E-T-S, suck, suck, suck. You know, I'm sure he'd like to, but he doesn't do that. This is a little bit different in baseball, and I think you're seeing that with the Red Sox ownership group. They will spend when they feel that their backs are up against the wall, because they feel they have to compete with the moves that are being made by other teams. With a guy like Mookie Betts, all of a sudden it becomes, well, he's internal, so that's where we can shave our money and we can do this and we can, you know, kind of take a step back and be able to not invest, because this is ultimately our goal. Our goal is to be competitive every year, and our goal is to make sure that we're, you know, putting out a product that people will rally around. Well, the problem is that the fan base is getting sick of that, and you're going to see that. You've seen that already. We've seen tons of people on social media claim that they're going to boycott the Red Sox. I think that's a big mistake. I actually think this team's going to be better than people think this year. I was looking at their lineup yesterday, and it doesn't look too bad, folks. Even with Mookie Betts removed from that lineup, they still have a lot of pop and a lot of guys that can get on base and maybe be that type of sleeper type, you know, team that has a better season than people think. So don't quite give up on the Red Sox just yet. But as far as the ownership group, yeah, they've got a lot to prove to this fan base that they're in it to win it. I don't think a lot of people believe that right now.
Yeah, and look, I'm one of them. You know, I've followed this team for a very long time. I've never got the same sense from this ownership group. They just seem out of touch with, you know, with the actual fan base for the most part, or at least like just out of touch with reality. You know, like it's just some of the things that decisions that they make it's just baffling to me. But you know, again, it is what it is, and you know, there are folks out there that are already working the, well, you know, they traded Mookie Betts only to be able to afford to sign him when he becomes a free agent at the end of the year. So we'll see. Maybe we're you know, a year from now, we'll be talking about one of the greatest heists ever as the Red Sox come off a World Series and re-sign Mookie Betts. But no, that's probably not going to happen. And I would like to share your optimism about this team, but I got to see the product on the field, because again, the lasting memory for me was something that was a little bit lackluster. And look, for those who are looking for some silver lining, the Nationals let Bryce Harper walk year before last. What did they do? Well, they went out and won a World Series. So we'll see. One of the things that, you know, I'm hesitant about is, well, the Red Sox still don't have a manager. I feel like,
yeah, that's a problem. Like that I can't sugarcoat. That's a problem. Now, I mean, I know Ron Renneke is the guy that everybody is assuming is going to take this job, but we haven't heard anything official yet. And pitchers and catchers, when are they supposed to report? I mean, it's I don't have that in front of me, but
they're already heading down they're already heading down to Fort Myers. I mean, the staff's already there again.
Well, we know the truck is there. They had a whopping three people on Lansdowne Street that turned out to see that truck leave. It's that's becoming less and less of a thing. For those of you that aren't in the Boston area, that is actually the departure of the equipment truck from Fenway Park as it makes its trip down to Fort Myers, Florida, is it's a thing here in Boston, and I never really understood it, to be honest with you. People would, you know, camp out, and they'd, you know, have like a little like block party and celebrate the leaving of the truck. Now, keep in mind that few, if any, players have ever actually showed up at this. Management generally doesn't. It's basically just watching the Fenway staff, who do a great job. They do a phenomenal job, their equipment team and whatnot. They stack the truck, and then the truck just drives away. That's gotten a lot less and less, I think, since the Patriots and the Sox, you know, themselves, the Bruins and the Celtics started winning championships. People realized they'd rather show up for a victory parade rather than show up to see an equipment truck drive away. So that's when I say truck day and the three people. Yeah, they had a very, very thin crowd this year for that departure, especially after the way the season ended last year. You can't blame it.
No,
Sorry, man. Go ahead.
No. I'm glad you brought that up, and you know, educate the listeners out there that aren't necessarily familiar with the world that is the Boston Red Sox and what they do and all that stuff. But I wouldn't even be surprised if the Red Sox started selling tickets to Truck Day. That the kind of, you know, special Truck Day promotion. Show up and pay us $60 to sit outside in the cold and watch a truck.
Yes, exactly.
Away.
Yep.
That's essentially what it would be.
You can buy a replica truck with your name emblazoned on it for only $89.95 more.
And receive your replica Truck Day pin that you can wear wherever you go.
Yes.
Like, who the hell wears pins? Whatever. But so anyways, the Red Sox don't have a manager, and I do find some of this pretty peculiar because I don't know, and I mentioned this before we got on the air, but the Wall Street Journal where's the date here? I don't have the date. Maybe I don't. Yeah, on the 7th. On Friday, I believe it was. Friday the 7th? Yeah, that makes sense. Published an article talking that really went in depth about the Astros sign stealing and shenanigans that they've gone through. And it was pretty eye-opening. Let's just put it this way. This is everything people wanted Spygate to be. Like, this is what people think Spygate was and what, you know, people hoped or pretend to think the NFL did with the Patriots and the information they got. Everything in this is so far over what, you know, the information or stuff they found out about the Patriots. It's absurd. I don't know how, if you had a chance to read through the whole thing, but it was pretty eye-opening to the point that the ultimate conclusion to all this was that it was the Astros front office, not Alex Cora, not the players, that began this system, began this history of cheating. You know, I love using that word now that it's not thrown at one team in particular, but this whole diabolical scheme to decipher pitching signals or pitch signs and all that stuff. It was implemented by the front office staff, and from my impression, Jeff Luhnow, the former general manager who has denied all culpability and has basically played the naive role in all this, it was a huge factor in this, along with a few interns and you know, obviously some of the players that were involved with it. That it eventually. I'm starting to think that maybe, again, the Red Sox might have jumped the gun with Alex Cora, because this, by all accounts, seems to, well, first off, the article doesn't mention Alex Cora once in any of this, which is, you know, says enough as it is, because, again, if you're talking about the details of how this all came about, you would think that the quote-unquote mastermind, the one who orchestrated it from the coaching standpoint, aka Alex Cora, would be mentioned at least once, and he was not. It all started with a PowerPoint presentation that evolved from, hey, we're going to be able to basically record signs and relay them quick enough so that people can decipher them throughout the game, and eventually turned into, oh, we're just going to put a TV screen in the dugout, and it's just going to evolve from there. And the existence and the growth of this system, as they called it, the dark arts, quote unquote, is what they called it, Codebreaker, was put in place and ran concurrently with the Astros' success. So you can draw a direct correlation with their regular season and postseason success to the implementation of this. And ultimately, it looks like, again, the impression that I get is the Red Sox might have jumped the gun with Alex Cora, and I feel like more and more of this is going to I'm actually surprised this hasn't caught more fire than what it actually has. But then again, it's baseball and not football, and it's, you know, the Astros and not the Patriots. So,
absolutely. I think you said this perfectly. And again, this is I can't tell you how happy I am to hear you sum this up by saying this is what people wanted Spygate to be. This is what they believed Spygate to be. And anybody that actually knows what Spygate was knows that this wasn't even a fraction of what went on here. But I do believe that the Red Sox may have jumped the gun when it comes to Alex Cora as well. And I was a proponent of the move that they made. I thought they made the right move at the time.
Me too.
I thought this was something that they needed to distance themselves from him. It looked like he was the central figure You know, obviously the connection between the Astros organization and then the Red Sox organization, and you see the both of them coming under fire, and it's, well, what's the common denominator? It was Alex Cora. It's looking now like this was a lot deeper than anybody ever gave it credit for. I'm really surprised this does not have a lot more legs than it does, considering that this, you know, absolutely ridiculous, asinine story about what went on in Cleveland this year with filming the Cincinnati sideline continued to get headline after headline after headline on a four-letter network, and erroneous tweets being put out by, you know, their staff members and their quote-unquote journalists that love to stir the pot when there's nothing in it. This, to me, is something that deserves a lot more credit, because you have teams out there that are, I'm sure, are doing it the right way and looking at this and saying, this is absolutely ridiculous. This needs to be addressed a little bit more seriously than it is. So, you know, I don't see the Red Sox reversing their course on Cora right now. I don't think we have enough information for them to do that. But this article definitely made it seem like maybe there was a rush to judgment there. And if that's the case, then it is a shame that they had to part ways with a guy that was able to win them a World Series. He had a great, he had a very great rapport with his players. And that's something that you can't duplicate in managers, especially in Major League Baseball. It's so easy for there to be a disconnect between the manager and the player. This is something that when you have that type of relationship, it's tough to recapture. So, you know, it's just unfortunate all the way around. But I'm glad this article came out, because at least it's shedding more light on something that really needs to be nipped in the bud now. And I'm glad that they're at least addressing this.
Yeah, and look, this is real quick. This is kind of how it all evolved. So the code breaker, quote unquote. I mean, this is what's so fascinating to me. It's like just how much information is in this just one article that 13 years and countless number of articles of speculation have never accomplished with Spygate in the NFL. And that's the funny thing about this is it's like within one 7-page print off enlarged text document basically puts so much more information out there and so much more nefarious intent, let's put it that way, than what Spygate was. Because, again, they got information on what the Patriots did. And look, you know, to their credit, they admitted to it. They were like, look, this is what we do. I think everyone was like, yeah, I think, you know, most teams do it. Okay, whatever, move on. The Astros, in this case, I mean, they've clearly gone above and beyond. There was apparently, meetings and emails between upper management and, of course, Jeff Luhnow discussing this, one of which, and I'm trying to pull it up right now because, I it's something that was so far not – okay, hi, Kat. The cat's joining me right now. So, but, yeah, it basically he in no short phrase or term, he basically said, hey, we're – you know, we're doing these things, and Jeff, and this is the best part about it. So Jeff Luhnow, anytime an email came up, talking about, you know, in incredibly specific words, but very clearly they're talking about the dark arts, quote unquote, they use that term a lot, and all these other things. Basically Jeff said, oh, I stopped reading the email because it was long. You know, that was his response to everything. Oh, I didn't read it all. Oh, so you conveniently missed those aspects of it too. So to me, it's been a I'm trying to I'm killing myself because I have this whole thing out highlighted here, and then I'm thinking, I'm like, you know what? If I highlight half the document, how the hell am I supposed to find out what I'm trying to find? But okay, all right. So here we go. One of the emails that Luhnow received, it was a message on Slack, and those of you who do group business meetings and stuff like that are familiar with Slack, whatever. It said, had the dark arts term written in it, and it says, lastly, I know the secrets that made us a championship team, some of which he'd definitely feel a lot safer if they were kept in-house, Coach Wesser told MLB investigators. Obviously, he was part of the staff of the Astros. And again, these are things that you would never find in any sort of deep dive investigation into Spygate. And this, here's the other one from August 2017. The system, our dark arts sign stealing department, has been less productive in the second half as the league has become aware of our reputation, and now most clubs change their signs a dozen times per game. And then kind of a little bit of a jab. He says, the struggling teams like the Blue Jays and Athletics don't seem to care, which that makes sense because it's the Blue Jays and the Athletics. And, you know, this is something Lunell responded with. He said, Tom, this type of write-up is very helpful. And then later, when asked about it, he said, oh, I didn't read the whole email. So I didn't see that last part. So again, you know, to me, my impression, reading this, reading kind of how this all has played out, and even from the get-go, from the jump, how these guys responded after the fact, after they were fired, it kind of seems like I said, Jeff Luhnow is playing the, you know, I'm just going to play the dumb card here. Oh, I didn't see it. I didn't see it. You know, I didn't see it. I just happened to ignore these sections every single time they came up. So, but yeah, this is this is something that it's frustrating in a way, like you said. It's not getting the coverage it should, or at least other situations have from like you said, the four-letter network. And to me, this is far more nefarious and far more this has far more intent to circumvent rules, and that was you know, key phrases when it comes to Patriots and shit like that, or stuff like that. I apologize. S-bombs. Oops, my bad.
Oh, that's all right.
It's okay. No, but yeah, so to me, it's funny that none of this stuff gets talked about, or it seems like it's been swept under the rug.
No, it does. It absolutely does. And I think in a lot of ways, you hit all the key points that you needed to. It's not the NFL. It's not the New England Patriots. There's not an agenda to vilify a franchise and make them out to be villains because it's convenient for the other fan bases that watch your network that want to hate this team. You want to fuel the fire. You want to make it you want to make it more than what it is. In a situation like this, there's really not that motivation. So that's why you're not going to see this story have the legs that Spygate or Deflategate or Cincinnati Gate or BS Gate, I guess, is another way
Helmet
to put it.
Gate.
You know,
communication.
Yeah,
gate.
Helmet.
The,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
I mean,
helmet
gate.
Communication
still.
Yeah, exactly. Fog gate. I remember there was that foggy preseason game where people tried to say that Bill Belichick had a fog machine out there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Oh, the CBS scene jumbotron is pointed at directly because no one else can see
that.
Now
that's
only in the arena. Only Bill Belichick could possibly be able to decipher that and have that over there. There's no one else that can see it. But whatever. You know, it's gut-wrenching and nauseating, you know, to think about. But bottom line is there's not that motivation to vilify the sport, to vilify the franchise. So that's why you're not going to see it. But in its core, yeah, this is much more egregious than what we've ever seen from anything regarding Spygate or anything to that nature. This was done with specific intent, and they achieve their goals as a result of it. And it does cloud some of their achievements. I'm sorry to say it, because this definitely gave them a competitive advantage beyond any shadow of a doubt. So, yeah, it's disheartening, I guess, as a Patriots fan to look at this and say that this is not covered as it should be. But at the same time, I'm not surprised in the least.
Yeah, no, I'm certainly not surprised, not at all. And again, you know, a couple years from now, when people are trying to draw comparisons to some nefarious or sketchy acts from some sort of team in any sport, they're going to obviously go to the Patriots and not the Astros. I mean, that's just how it's going to be. And again, I don't think it's a fair comparison because, again, this article lays out far more information that you've ever gotten than what you got out of Spygate. I mean, all you've gotten out of Spygate is just endless speculation supported by more speculation. That's essentially what it is. And at some point, right, you're running around chasing your tail because, A, you can't disprove what isn't true. Yeah, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? You can't disprove a hypothetical. That's probably a better way to do it. And that's kind of how these arguments tend to go with the Patriots. Is you're going to throw out something that's completely hypothetical that you can't prove, but also I can't disprove because, again, can I prove that, you know, again, stealing something from South Park, that God's a flying spaghetti monster? No, I can't disprove that. But, you know, come on. you know what I mean? Like, it's a flawed argument, and it's a flawed attempt at winning an argument that is used quite often, especially in the Twitter world. It's you know, logic doesn't have any part in arguments anymore. But again, I digress a little bit. So again, it's not going to get the play that it does. I did bring it up, obviously, for that reason, and too, because again, I think this sheds a different light on Alex Kaur and kind of what we viewed this situation when it originally came out. Because again, you can make the easy connections, and you know, we obviously bought into it as well. You know, okay, well,
right,
there's one common denominator between the two teams. It's Alex Kaur. Alex Kaur was said to be the you know, quote unquote ringleader among the players. It was, you know, the original dates. This is kind of like the, you know, 11 of 12 balls were under deflated. It was like, oh, well, they were saying, oh, it just ran from 2017 and stopped in the playoffs, and then it didn't happen in 2018. Well, now all of a sudden we're learning that it was implemented in 2016 before Alex Kaur and ran post Alex Kaur. So now all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait a minute. The date, the timeline kind of, you know, it doesn't line up from what we originally thought, because, you know, when you look at it, you're like, oh, okay, well, this scheme ran during the exact same time that Alex Kaur was there, and then it stopped. Okay, now that adds to it. Okay, well, then of course, you know, Alex Kaur must have had a huge hand in this, but wait a minute. Now you're telling me that it was there before and after he was there? All of a sudden, that changes the tone of it. It changes everything. And again, this article, when you spend, I don't know how many words it was, but when you spend this much time going into detail about these conversations and about the investigation, putting names, and this is the big thing, putting names to sources. There were plenty of people that put their name to this information, including current members of the Astros organization. So again, You add a lot of credibility to it, and the fact that Alex Kaur was not mentioned not once in this entire article was pretty eye-opening to me. So we're going to see how that plays out, because eventually the Red Sox are going to have to hire a manager. I mean, they just can't, you know, they can't just patchwork this together. But then again, it's the Red Sox, so ownership, I'm sure, is dragging their feet. Or maybe they're actually kind of seeing how this plays out, because I don't know how it would work to bring him back, but I think perhaps this might be a situation where you might see the rare case of, hey, we kind of screwed up, let's bring you back, and you know, we'll kind of go from there. But who knows, Mike. Hopefully maybe we'll get an answer tomorrow so we can talk about it. But we'll
perhaps see. We live in hope, my friend.
That's right. So until then, though, thank you very much for tuning in, folks. We will be back tomorrow at 8 a.m Check out the replay if you're just tuning in now. You can obviously always check this video out on sportscaster.com/fullpresscoverage. And, of course, go to fullpresscoverage.com, and you can find our videos, content, podcasts, all that fun stuff. And, yeah, it'll be good. So, folks, have a great day. Give us a follow on Twitter at FPC Radio Live. I am at IGLEN31. He is at MDABATEFPC. And, of course, follow Full Press Coverage at FP Coverage. Have a great day, folks, and stay safe, be warm, and yeah, go doink the clown. Dun, 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 dun.